Good morning, everyone. Good to be back in Lisbon. Let's get cracking. This is what I'll be talking about this morning. The status of the IANA free pools, special addresses, throwing some back. The new mechanism we have for selecting which /8 to allocate to an RIR when they request more address space from us. The introduction of the new reverse DNS self-management system, IDN CCTLDs, and the business excellence program we're working on. So, the IANA free pool status, there are 26 unicast IPv4/8s. That's roughly 500 million IPv4 addresses, give or take. So that's what we've got left. And as Jeff mentioned yesterday in his presentation in the Monday afternoon plenary, there are 8 16-bit AS number blocks left. We seem to have a bit of a rush on AS number blocks last year. I think we went through a few more than usual. RIPE-NCC received 3, I think. Special addresses. We have been working in the IETF on doing a lot of documentation. One of the things we've been documenting is documentation prefixes, making it easier for people to write documentation and not use address space allocated to someone else or themselves and risk that address space causing problems. APNIC were very kind and they donated 2/24s from different /8s just to make it a little bit more eye-catching and easier to do this documentation. Now, the draft that's documented in is, I believe, on the agenda for the next IESG meeting in October. So we should have an answer soon as to whether that will be heading its way towards the RFC editor. Now, as people in this room will definitely know, we reclaimed 14/8 a couple of years ago, mainly through the help of people in this room, because most of the addresses in that particular /8 were used in this part of the world, so it was people in this part of the world that helped in cleaning that up. We haven't had another /8 that we could reclaim, but we've been working on returning some slightly smaller blocks of address space to the free pool. We've been working with Aaron and the IESG. Basically, these addresses were registered to us in the Aaron Whois database, and so we've been making sure that there's no reason that they cannot go back into the free pool, and I believe that the RIRs will be distributing these addresses, admittedly not very many addresses, between the RIRs so that they can be allocated as necessary. There's one other block, 128.66/16. That is mentioned in the draft IANA IPv4 examples there. It was unofficially used as a documentation prefix, so it wasn't included in the last RFC 33330, the IPv4 special addresses RFC, so it hasn't actually been a documentation prefix for years and years, but it wasn't noted, so now we've noted. I think that will be going back as well. So this is the mechanism for selecting which /8s to allocate to RIRs. Now, as was presented here and in a few other groups a couple of years ago, we noticed that there were people using /8s that had not been allocated. And we realized that that could be a little bit problematic. So we commissioned Dwayne Wessels from the Measurement Factory and OARC to do some research into this, and he did some research and he came up with a series of this is how these /8s seem to be used. It was research based on DNS queries received in the Inadreda ARPA servers, which are the root DNS servers. And we basically, based on this research, took the unallocated slash eights and cut them into two pools, those that seem to be more used and those that seem to be less used. And now when an RAR comes for additional address space and they justify it and we're going to allocate them address space, we use a random allocation mechanism based on the mechanism in RFC 2777, which is a verifiable random selection mechanism. It means that you can replay this yourself to make sure that you can see what's going on. We've described it in an announcement on the IANA website and on the ICANN blog. Basically, we use stock market closing prices, stock market prices at midday to work out which slash eight is allocated to the RAR from each of these pools. Now, Afrinic and LACNIC both have smaller pools of slash eights, and so what we did there was we pooled two of the less used slash eights and set them aside for LACNIC and Afrinic so that when they come for additional allocations, they will get slash eights from these slash eights that are set aside for them, just because they have smaller pools of address space to start off with. So if you want to go and look at the details, if you look at the report section on the IANA website, and we've got an explanation of how that works in detail. Another thing we've been doing is working with the engineering departments of the five RARs on a self-service management system for reverse DNS. Basically, this will allow the RARs to very, very quickly change the DNS servers and DNSSEC records for their reverse domains, both in IP6 to ARPA and in ADRA to ARPA. It's based on standard security technologies, and we're at the point now where the work is finished and we're just scheduling the deployment. Along with this, there will also be a new mechanism in the whois.iana.org that supports reverse DNS lookup, which currently, if you look at for an ADRA to ARPA domain or IP6 to ARPA on whois.iana.org, you don't get an answer. You will be getting an answer when this is launched. Another thing that I think I should mention, just because it's probably important to people in this room, even though it's not directly a numbers issue, we're expecting about 20% more TLDs over the next 6 months or 9 months. This is a result of introducing the fast track for IDN ccTLDs. We're expecting 50 to 60 requests, 15 to 20 languages. We're not entirely sure what will be requested and by who, but we're getting ready for it. 16th of November is when I believe the application process begins, and we're expecting that there will be, there will be a string validation process, and then it goes through the regular IANA process for delegating a domain. So, as you can expect, with that increase, both in the number of TLDs and also just generally the workload that we're going to be having at IANA is increasing a bit. One thing we want to do is we want to make sure that we're doing the right job. We want to do an excellent job. It's something that's part of the strategic plan that we're working on, and so we're introducing a business excellence program. Basically, this is to make sure that we have a sustainable program and framework for introducing improvements in our services. Now, the first thing we're doing is we're going to be creating a baseline measurement for what we do so that we've got a method for tracking how we're improving our services. By mid-December, we will have a document that will have that baseline measurement in it, and we'll do a self-assessment on that document in mid-January. And what we'll be doing is we'll be looking for the areas that we need to make improvements, what those improvements are, and so on. And in the January to March period, we will be identifying the strategic initiatives that we'll be taking, and then we'll be beginning projects for what those improvements are going to be. Now, the reason that we're doing it in this timeline is we do our budget setting from the 1st of January. So rather than go and sort of identify things in the middle of the year and then have to wait several months to go and put them into a budget so that we can make sure that we make the relevant improvements, we're doing the work to identify where we need to make improvements directly before the budget setting process to make sure that we are all in sync and we can go ahead and make these improvements straight away as the budget goes through. So one of the important things, of course, is that we've got to keep you all updated. So we're trying to make sure that we keep people updated on this at ICANN meetings, RIR meetings, at IETF meetings, meetings relevant to top-level domain operators and so on. Sometimes through presentations, also through written announcements on our blog, and of course just sitting down with people and having a chat, because you can't beat sitting down with people and having a chat. That's very good. So we're going to be continuing our communication work on this as it proceeds. This is something which is cyclical. It's not just a one-off thing. The idea is it's a multi-year piece of work, and we go into our baseline measurement this year, and then we continue to do self-assessments to make sure that we're identifying what areas we have for improvement, and then we go and work through on those areas, introduce those improvements, then do additional analysis to make sure that the improvements we've made are actually working, and so on and so forth. So we'll be making an effort to keep people in this community and other communities, stakeholders, aware of what we're doing. Another mechanism that we'll be using for communicating is Twitter. We've got a Twitter account. We're obviously not going to be posting anything very long on Twitter. Normally something like, we're here today, and you can come and have a chat, because having a chat is nice. So if you want to follow us on Twitter, we're quite low volume, feel free. And that's it. Paul?
Any questions for Leo? Ooh, Jeff.
Jeff Houston, APNIC. Going back to the first part of your presentation when you talked about various bits of old IPv4 address blocks and their current status, my question is one able to interpret the latest 3330 BIS draft as the definitive list of all IANA reserved addresses, so that if it's not in that draft, it's not reserved by IANA?
You made a comment about that on the IETF at IETF.org list, and I agree with your comment. I think that that should be the document that says it, and if there's something else that should go in there, then we should update that document. I think it's very confusing to people to have multiple documents. I think there should be one source.
So my question is, do you believe that 3330 BIS document that's currently in draft form is the definitive record?
I believe it is. I have no reason to believe it isn't.
So the rest of us can then walk merrily off with that knowledge and assume that's the case, yeah?
Yes.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, because of course it's an IETF document, which means that everyone's had an opportunity to tell us that we're wrong. It's gone through, I think, 11 versions now. If after 11 versions it's not authoritative, then we've done a very poor job of reviewing it in the IETF.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Leo? Yep. Okay, thanks very much, Leo. Thanks for coming.
Well, thank you, Paul.
OK. Okay. Next up in the schedule should be a presentation from Avranic, although no one is here from Avranic today. I'm told that we will have some slides that we can put up on the website. The reason for Avranic's absence is that some of you may be aware that there is an ITU World event, telecom event happening in Geneva, and the NRO does have a presence there. And as the coin drops, a lot of the resources from Avranic were taken and sent to Geneva. So they've got most of their people that they have, extra resources anyway, on that side. So they're quite busy, close to us, but quite busy as well. So if I can then just ask Jeff Houston to come up from APNIC to give his presentation. And before I do that, I think you can see that you've seen some of us running around here with these red t-shirts on. I will turn around so that you can see this outfit. There are a few of us here that are doing the meet and greet. For those of you that weren't here yesterday, this was announced. We are here for those of you that are new, for answer any questions you may have or to introduce you to anyone you want to know. So I am one of those people as well. I am in the red t-shirt. So for those of you that are new here that weren't here yesterday, then I'd like to meet you. So please don't be shy. Okay, cheers, Jeff.
Thanks, Paul. Hi, my name would have been Paul Wilson, but he sends his apologies, so instead you get me. I'm here to give you the APNIC update. Very quick overview. I'll go through the update on services, give you a quick rundown on the outcomes of the most recent meeting, APNIC 28, that was held in Beijing in the last week of August, and then have a look at some activities and our priorities and services arising from our survey of members as to what they want done and their priorities and where the next APNIC meetings are. We're a registry, we give out addresses. These are some pretty pictures that show what we've done. I would say, however, there are some slightly interesting things there if you dig pretty hard. If you look at 2008 in IPv4, APNIC allocated a little in excess of 5/8s across that 12-month period. The average run rate at the moment we're going through in IPv4 addresses is approximately 12/8s a year. So as you can see, APNIC is certainly allocating a relatively large proportion of address space in IPv4 at this point in time. Obviously, some of the economies in Asia, and in particular China, have weathered this financial whatever it was very well, and growth in that area is still remarkably strong. However, the year is now 3/4 full, and if you extrapolate 2009 to the end, the growth that we've seen in 2006, 2007, and 2008 will probably not be an outcome in 2009, and that probably is an outcome of the broader business dimension. So overall, in our region, the internet is not growing at the pace that it was before someone decided to make a bonfire of all that money. It's also pretty obvious in the one at the bottom there with AS numbers that last year we did around 700 AS numbers. That's actually a really good indicator of activity, oddly enough. And this year we won't do that many. We're on track for doing around 550. So again, what it points to is that the broader world and its financial sort of state does have an impact in the registry activity. The one that's moving along is IPv6, and this is not the amount of space that's been delegated, it's actually the number. And again here, 3/4 of the way through the year, 140. Last year it was 160 for the entire year. So oddly enough, V6 is bucking that larger trend, and there are still, you know, a hefty number of allocations. But don't forget, 160 isn't many. Out of the grand scheme of things, these are still, by comparison, pretty small numbers. Don't forget we did 700 AS numbers last year. So it's not that every person who comes to APNIC is getting IPv6 at this point. It's still a much smaller proportion. So 2 years to go, there are a hell of a lot of people all over the world who need to get moving, and APNIC is not immune. So anyway, beyond the numbers, back to words now. We've got lots of members, and we feel very good about that, and we love them dearly. We now have 2,000, which is a bit of a milestone, and that's terrific. And indeed, July 2009 was the largest month on record for new membership. So even though the industry itself is aggregating pretty heavily in terms of mass market deployment, where large providers are now doing very, very massive deployments,
we're still seeing a huge number of folk in the corporate and small business environment who are actually using these services directly to get their own space and their own resources. So there is a hefty amount of activity. Our help desk inquiries are now 1,400 plus a month, and the growth rate is still remarkable. So we're moving along. And of course, with policy, we continue to have fun. We had fun with Proposition 50, which was IPv4 address transfers for over 3 years. And after a rather fascinating year, eventually in Beijing, we managed to reach consensus in the meeting that we wanted a transfer policy proposal. And you can have a look at the details online. But basically, it's much the same as we've been thinking about for some years, with a few tweaks about before V4 truly runs out, there are a few criteria you have to meet. But once the pool is completely depleted, the framework for transfers changes slightly and is a little more open. We also, Proposition 73, did an interesting one that realistically tries to make V6 far more accessible to existing holders of V4 space. So the proposal was to direct the Secretariat to try and automate a huge amount of the V6 assessment process and allocation process for existing holders of address space and try and get it done in the current parlance of one-click shopping. In other words, to really make that particular allocation remarkably smooth and efficient for users. So we will get on and do that. And there's a global policy proposal. I'm not sure about the status in right, but the address policy meeting later this week will tell you about the IANA assignment of AS blocks. And we also had a policy proposal around the reclamation of AS numbers. Three things didn't reach consensus, and you can see about them on the webpage. A rather technical proposal about historical address resources, another thing about that whole /8 in V4, and requiring aggregation on subsequent allocations in V6 didn't get consensus at the meeting. But again, details on the website. APNIC's manner in which it determines its priorities and services and activities is certainly subtly different to what you're used to here in RIDE. And rather than having a standing working group to look at that, we actually conduct every 2 years a survey of members and stakeholders across the region with the assistance of John Earls. And from that, derive a priority list of what kinds of activities and services are valued by the members. And that list there is basically the current set we're working to. And I'm very pleased to see that the work in the research and development sector from the Chief Scientist Division is up there at the top. Well done, members. Thank you for your support. But seriously, yes, we are moving on and doing a fair deal of work. APNIC's resource certification service went online as a part of the MyAPNIC portal now a year ago. And we've now had that service up and running as a normal part of our service now for over 12 months. Work still continues in that, and we are doing some developmental work over the next few months in enhancing that service and broadening its area of application and number of spaces. And we're also spending a fair deal of time working inside the IETF to get a lot of that technology standardised to allow others to also create tools and services. We're also in the research and development area looking actually interestingly at BGP. There have been a lot of folks saying if everyone on the planet got their own /32 and decided to route it, BGP would naturally melt down, crash and die a horrible death. Which is a fine emotive statement, but is it true? What are the true dynamics of BGP? What's its scaling capability? How big can it get and why? And we've certainly been doing some work in APNIC at the research and development area in research just to try and understand precisely those kinds of constraints where the routing system may or may not impose some form of constraint on the address allocation structure. What sort of spaces can we route with our existing technology, and what sort of future scaling is possible even within the current constraints of BGP? There's been similar stuff that we've been doing in the research area in measuring DNS, and George Michelson will report later this week on one of the more fascinating areas of looking at DNS queries and measuring them. And I think I reported in Berlin last year sometime in RIPE something, and some work we've done in trying to measure IPv6 using different metrics than just simply looking at packets on the wire and trying to understand if there are visible long-term trends. So we continue to do that work. Education and training, there's a big focus at this point rather on network engineering education now to actually try and assist folk in some of the areas with IPv6 in particular. As any of you have tried, when you start bringing things up in IPv6, more than just adding it as another protocol into the routing mix, but looking at things like authentication, DHCP, you know, address allocation structures and so on, there's actually a lot of detail there. And we've expanded our test lab there to actually include an IPv6 test bed to give some practical experience. And we've been working with Team Kimru to do expert security training in our region. We've also had the e-learning and self-paced work. IPv6 promotion, certainly like all the RIRs, is definitely up there as a very high priority. We too have got an ICONS IPv6 wiki working and a huge amount of messages and material. Our latest effort was actually in the Asia Pacific Economic Community. They have a meeting, I think it's once a year, in the telco sector. And the latest meeting was actually a couple of weeks ago in Mexico, where the Pacific Rim nations, basically APEC, meet for a workshop. And we were there with an IPv6 set of presentation material. It's been a long-standing issue, I think, with the RIRs almost since their inception, that our processes are arcane, weird, convoluted, and bizarre. And certainly this is something that we've been trying for years to make a rather difficult process of creating the materials that justify an allocation into something that's simple and easy to use. And we're certainly still working on trying to make sure that we can make that process as simple as possible. So we've been working with our portal, MyAPNIC, to have features that actually try and make that whole process of requesting resources to be massively easier and simpler for all concerned, and in particular the initial resource allocation and the subsequent resources. We're doing a huge amount of process engineering. So work continues. We're very grateful for the work done in RIPE with the test traffic measurement work. So grateful indeed that we've taken on a partnership with them and helping to deploy TTM boxes across the Asia Pacific region. So we're actually doing that deployment now. We're sponsoring 12 nodes straight up, and we're trying to deploy them where we currently have root server locations. So Pakistan, Hong Kong, you know, you can read the list too. And George Michelson will be reporting later this week on the Day in the Life project around that area of monitoring the DNS. As Leo mentioned as well, there's also been a fair deal of work in trying to make this whole delegated zone service better, trying to automate those tools and giving a secure channel with positive acknowledgements up and down that a delegation request was made, received, and acted on. So we're also doing that facing downward in the reverse pointer zones that we serve, and we're doing that with DNSSEC signing as well, so that we'll have full DNSSEC support. Root server deployment continues, now one deployed in Taiwan and planning for Mongolia, hopefully by the end of the year. You Northern Hemisphere folk, yeah? Winters are bad. Particularly, you know, they're really icy and awful. And I've been told that the winters in Amsterdam, in fact, all over the Northern Hemisphere, are particularly crappy around late February, early March. So now is the time to head to sunnier equatorial climes and make your way to Kuala Lumpur, where I can guarantee it'll be a huge amount warmer than where you'll be at home. So, you know, the best I can guarantee is heat and plenty of it at Kuala Lumpur in Apricot 2010 in February. So certainly we'd love to see you there. And if that's not quite in your timetable, then we'd certainly like to see you in Bangkok in Thailand in August 2010. Thank you very much.
Any questions?
Thank you for the weather report and for the reminder of winters here. Any questions for Jeff there? Okay. Thank you very much, Jeff. Just a quick announcement before I ask the next speaker to come up. There is a RIPE NCC Services Center located across the hall from here. So any of you that are our members, please feel free to stop by there if you have any questions for any of our staff about the services or the service we give to you. We're very happy to speak with you. So next up is Aaron. So if I can ask John Curran, their CEO and president, to come up and
Okay. Good morning. I'm glad to be here giving the Arran update to this wonderful RIPE meeting. You'll see a similarity between some of the RIR presentations. We're all facing similar challenges and doing similar activities. Arran has spent a lot of time recently working on its online portal and its business processes. It's definitely true that the processes that have evolved over the last decade in the RIRs are colorful, and we actually have a pretty significant team back at home doing business process re-engineering, trying to streamline and make sense of these processes so that they can then be put online. We actually released Arran Online 2.1 about 2 months ago, which allows a much better update process for all the points of contact update. We also have a timeline for all of the enhancements that we'll be putting in Arran Online for those people who deal with contacts both in this region and in Arran and deal with RIR information. You might want to look at the timeline for the roadmap because we're trying to aggressively automate everything that you need to interact with Arran. Community consultations underway. Arran has a process by which if we're about to make a decision for resources, it's not presently in the plan and we're looking for guidance, we go out to the community to a consultation process. And with the release of Arran Online 2.1, we went out to community consultation on phasing out the use of those email-based SWIP templates for certain updates. This is a colorful consultation, I knew it would be. And you can follow it on the, if you happen to be in the Arran region, you can follow it on the Arran Discuss or Arran Consult mailing lists. We have an upcoming Arran election, which we're busy with, obviously. Board of Trustees, our advisory council, which acts as our policy consultation group, and the NRO number council. These will all be elected right after our October meeting. Research. We don't have a huge research team at Arran. Occasionally we go out to the community to do research. We contracted recently for a study regarding potential market pricing for IPv4 address space in the period near and through IPv4 exhaustion. We've actually been asked for this by the community. Some of our ISPs have said, I'm not sure what to expect once IPv4 runs out. You won't have any in the free pool. What will happen? What do you think I'll be doing 2 or 3 years hence to obtain address space to continue our business? And that's an interesting question. So we're out having a study's been announced. We have a researcher working on it now, interviewing folks in the region to try to predict what might happen post V4 depletion. We've developed an Arran pandemic response plan. We all see the various flu viruses going around. Turns out a lot of those, one of the biggest concerns is workplace-based spread of those. So we have a tiered response plan that allows Arran to work with less people in the office, a lot less people in the office, no one in the office, with various levels of service as a result. We're also supporting the NRO outreach efforts, obviously. There's a lot of outreach going on doing education about IPv4 depletion and IPv6 adoption. We also have personnel at ITU Telecom World this week, IGF in November. In terms of activities that we're doing in resource management, we have a fairly big push on revoked resources, making sure that resources that aren't being used are not sitting idle in the community. We've recently, as a result of going through and making sure everything is current, we've pulled over the history of the last 3 years more than 3,800 ASNs. Those are predominantly 2-byte ASNs, which helps us enormously. And also quite a few number of IPv4 blocks with a distribution you can see on the graph, which provides space for all of us to use and prevents drawdown of the free pool unnecessarily. Legacy. We have a somewhat unique situation. All the RIRs have legacy resources in their regions, but Arran has a very large base of what we call legacy resources, which is address blocks assigned prior to the RIR's conception. In our region, part of the process of making sure that we do the right thing is formalizing our relationship with legacy block holders. We ask legacy address holders to sign a legacy RSA, or registration services agreement. And this legacy RSA, as part of signing it, they agree to pay us $100 per year, so we keep track of their records in the database and provide in-adder and who-is service. We also validate that the parties that claim that they are responsible for that address space actually are responsible for that address space, which can be an adventure, as we all know. Some, a lot of folks like to jump up and claim they're responsible for address space for companies that may not be around anymore, claim responsibility for address space that they were only peripherally involved with another company. So we go through and we're working with the legacy holders to validate that they are the holder of record and to bring them under a contractual agreement with Aaron. The legacy RSA has some properties that people may not realize. It is basically a standstill almost agreement. It states that we won't change the fees, nor will policies adopted after you sign it affect you unless you, as a legacy RSA holder, upgrade to the latest version of the agreement. To this end, it's a very important thing for people who have legacy RSA, legacy resources in the Aaron region to pursue, yet we have a very small adoption. The number of organizations coming in looking for legacy RSAs is probably about 5% at our estimate of the potential legacy pool. This will probably change since we won't be processing requests for things like transfers unless we have validated the resources under a legacy RSA. So as we get into the next few years, we expect to see a few more people show up to make sure their resources that they're holding are actually theirs. At present, we have 756 requests in for legacy resource agreements. 334 have been signed, 340 are pending. These pending ones are ones where we're out there saying we need some more information about to make sure you're the actual authorized contact. In the case of these legacy blocks, they're all early 90s or even late 1980s assignments, so validating them as they come in is very important. Engineering activities, as I said, we're doing quite a bit on business process re-engineering and upgrading our web-based services. We're trying to improve our existing internet routing registry system, our WHOIS system in terms of performance. Our RPKI pilot with the other IRs, we're also working with an RPKI pilot, allowing us to issue certs for blocks that have been issued to members. And DNSSEC, we have a two-phase DNS security process. Phase one is signing the zone, the in-adder zone that we're responsible for, and phase two will be inclusion of the DS record provisioning that we want, members want us to be able to pass that down hierarchically. Policy discussions. We have quite a few policy discussions on the docket. You can go to aaron.net/policy to look at. Equitable IPv4 runout is right now, it proposes that as we get closer and closer to a depleted IPv4 free pool, the number of months worth of address space that we issue with a new request gets shortened to 6 months, 3 months. So it ensures that there isn't a party coming in, swooping up 12 months worth of addresses and grabbing the last where everyone else gets none. It makes sure that the rate at which we draw the quanta drops as we get closer and closer to depletion. Open access to IPv6 removes the, currently there's some constraints on IPv6 assignments. You really have to be an existing operator or have a plan to provide service to as an ISP to a certain number of entities. This makes it much easier to get v6 address. It's not very difficult now, but this would remove nearly any impediment for any organization to get IPv6 address space. IPv6 multiple discrete networks allows blocks to be assigned to entities that operate completely discrete v6 networks that have no connectivity between them. We have the same global IANA to RIR policies that are in discussion in the other region, an IPv4 assignment one and an ASN assignment one. And we've actually got recommended for adoption coming up a community networks IPv6 assignment policy that'll be discussed in Dearborn. In terms of the outreach that we're doing, we are very active, going out to many, many forum discussing about IPv4 depletion, IPv6 adoption, the RIR system, and the policy development process. some of the venues we've been at, or will be at, CES, APECTEL, as Jeff was mentioning, HostingCon, Internet 2, a number of forums out there. A lot of people think that this is a well-known issue, the IPv4, IPv6 issue. It is not. Outside of a small number of folks in this community, in the business community, this is a completely unknown issue that's 2 years away. And so every time we go out and present the message, we get interesting responses. People coming to us saying, "You're kidding, right? What do you mean we're running out of IPv4 addresses?" We're trying to get the message out there, and we're trying to be right with it. It's not that we're running out. It's just we're running out of the ones that are free and easy to get at. There will still, the same number of addresses exist 3 years from now as before. It's just most of them already been assigned to someone at least once. It still is an exciting message for people hearing it the first time. Aaron goes social. We have outreach on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. You can go find us out there if you're interested. It turns out some people like interacting with us this way. They find it an easier way of tracking what's going on at Aaron, so we're there. And finally, we also have an upcoming meeting in an exciting, dynamic place. Ours happens to be in coordination with NANOG. We'll be in Dearborn, Michigan in October, later on this month. And we more than welcome folks to come on out. After that, we're going to be in Toronto in April. And I can't tell you the other meetings after that, but we hope to get to some warmer climates like our other RIRs. That's about all I have. And any questions? Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, John. I just flew in from Toronto, and I can tell you that it was not warm there. Anyway, next up, if I can ask my colleague Roque Gagliano from LACNIC to come give us an update.
Hello, everybody. Hello? Can you hear me? Oh, there we go. Hello, everybody. My name is Roque from LACNIC. I know Raul is in your program. He's about to arrive. He's landing in a couple of hours, but he'll be here in the afternoon to answer all the questions. But anyway, I'm Roque Gagliano from the LACNIC Engineering Department, and this is the LACNIC report. This is my one slide presentation. We're growing, we're still growing the number of resources, we're growing the number in the membership base. We got now more than 1,000 members, and we're also growing the staff number. Similarities with the other IRs, as Jeff mentioned, we're growing particularly in the end user space, that means companies, and also we're growing particularly in the small business side, so small ISPs. So we made the landmark of the 1,000 members, which is very good. If you look at the registration numbers, in the IPv4 space, we can see that the amount of space we are allocating per year is pretty much the same in the last 3 years, and we believe that this year we're going to be around the same amount of allocation than the previous year. It's different in the IPv6 area, where this year is going to be this is going to be the year with the highest number of allocations. We already surpassed in 2008, so we're very happy about that. Policy development process. We have a new policy development process since last year, and we've been implementing through the whole year. And as a consequence of this, we have now co-chairs, so we do have two chairs. And in the last LACNIC meeting, we select Nicolás Antoniello to be our second co-chair, and he will be serving for 2 years. Policies under discussion. As our our policy development process goes, the status of most of the policies that were discussed during the meeting is right now they are in the board of director queue. And the ones that reach consensus and are waiting for in that queue are particularly the global policy for the IPv4 blocks that you guys are also discussing in this in this forum. The we have an IPv6 policy for ISPs that already have IPv4 space. We had something similar for end users in our region, and now we have kind of like a fast track for IPv6 for every single ISP that already have IPv4, making it easier for them to even not even to justify the IPv6 space and giving them an /32. ASPlane notations for 32-bit ASN, this is similar to what's been approved in other IIRs. We have a regional policy about the allocation of 16-bit ASN. Basically, that policy says that if starting in the 1st of January 2010, if there's still 16-bit ASNs in the LACNIC pool, and you can justify that you need the 16-bit ASN somehow, LACNIC will allocate those 16 bits instead of 32, but we still have them. We have a new resource recovery process for all our resources, and we had just we're modifying our minimum allocation for IPv4 space to /22. Previously, it was a /21 in the LACNIC region. We're in the last call for the IANA assignment number, the policy for the ASN numbers from IANA, and this policy is particularly because it's the first policy that's coming through what we call expedite process. This is, LACNIC has only one annual meeting. That means that normally a policy has to wait for the whole year cycle to get discussed in our forum. And through this expedite process, we'll be able to discuss policies only electronically by email in our mailing list. So I talk about the LACNIC 12 meeting that happened in Panama last May. It was a very successful meeting. We have more than 300 participants from 40 countries. There we introduced two new projects. The first one is the Amparo project. This is a project about providing training and promoting the creation of a security response team all along the region. And the second project is the Simon project, which is going to be our measurement project from the LACNIC region. And we're excited about both of them. We also have our regional Caribbean meeting. This is a meeting that focuses in the Caribbean region. It happened this last July in Trinidad and Tobago. We got 70 attendees from 17 countries in the region. And we normally try to co-organize that together with some other Caribbean event, and this year happens at the same time as the Canto exhibition. So again, very successful because it allows us to discuss policy with the Caribbean people. IPv6 tour. We continue our IPv6 activities. We're doing activities all over the continent, and what you can see is the regions, the countries we've been in the last 24 months. This year we had activities in 8 countries, and we're going to go next to Belize and Nicaragua this month. There's also a lot of activity going on in Brazil, organized by the NICBR, but basically we're trying to finally covering the whole service area. FRIDA program. This is our fund for helping the development of research in the region. We just finished a new call for proposals yesterday, and the results are going to be available in December. You're going to find all the information online around that. I think it's the 19th of December of which project were funded by this initiative. So, next. Other activities. We got something new this year, which is our Outstanding Achievement Award. Basically, this is an award to honor individuals who make great contribution to the development of the Internet Society in the Latin American region. So this time was the first time, the first year that we organized it. And this first edition was presented to Ms. Ida Holtz, who is the head of the Central Computer Department in the University of the Republic in Uruguay. Basically, there was a committee that selected the person, received the nomination and selected the person. And this is a very good new opportunity to award very important people in our region. In the public affairs area, we set up a government working group, something similar you guys have done already. This is the idea of this working group is to facilitate the communication with government related to internet resource activities. The first meeting was held during Panama, so we took the advantage to get some governmental people, government representative, to our annual meeting. And the second meeting, it was held in Rio de Janeiro in Brazil, which was also coordinated to be at the same time of another activity we had there that is next, which is actually our IGF preparation meeting. We did this in Rio together with some other organizations, particularly from the non-for-profit area. Last week, we just came from Bariloche, Argentina, which was also pretty cool, pretty cold, I can tell you that. We organized a workshop about regional interconnectivity. We talk about peering and exchange points, etc., with the CITAL organization, which is basically the organization that takes care of regulation in the whole Americas. This kind of workshop, we're also going to be organized in the IGF in next month, so... Our Master ISIS project has to do with developing installation of root servers all along the region. We installed this year, we finalized with 6 root servers from the F-root through an agreement we have with ISC. This was a landmark for us because it was the first root server that we installed in the Caribbean part of the LACNIC region. We were in St. Martin, the island of St. Martin, where we installed it at the OCIX exchange point, and you can see the crew there doing the installation. And we took advantage of this activity to do some V6 training too. Talking in the engineering side, RPKI, we're working in our own project, and we plan to have a beta system by March 2010. We're also working in DNS upgrades and preparing ourselves for DNSSEC deployment and also an increase in our DNS activity due to some internal reorg that we're working on. So that's all. And you got any questions? Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Roque. Okay, that completes the updates from the RIRs. Thank you, everyone. We're going to move over to the ASO. If I can ask Dave Wilson to come up and give us an update on what's happening in the Address Council.
Thank you very much. I'm Dave Wilson. The hat I'm wearing this morning is that of a member of the ICANN, Address Supporting Organization, Address Council. The position is an elected one. I was elected by more or less the people in this room 3 years ago, which means that the seat is due for renewal at this meeting. What I'm just doing now is giving a a summary of what we've done over the past few months since the last RIPE meeting. While that's sorting out, I'll just begin. The Address Council, if you haven't witnessed it before, is made up of 15 members. There are three nominated from each of the five regions. Thank you very much. The three members in the RIPE region are Hans-Petter Hollen, Wilfried Weber, and myself. The main functions we do, there's a few different things that we do. The group works as a liaison, if you like, between the RIR system and ICANN itself. The three main functions that I've put up here, we appoint two ICANN board directions, three-year terms, two out of every 3 years. We also nominate someone to the ICANN nominations committee. And our main function, if you like, is to shepherd global policy to ensure that the process is followed in each region and then give assurance to the ICANN board when they go to finally adopt a global policy on the basis of that assurance. One of those functions, nominating someone to the nominations committee, the way this works is someone can serve on the ICANN NOMCOM for a maximum of two consecutive years until there's, I think, then a two-year period before they can be nominated again. Hartmut Lasser, who's sitting over there, very kindly did this job very well for the past 2 years and has stepped down as required. And our own Wilfried, sitting two away from him, is our nominee for next year. So thank you very much, both. The only other thing I want to mention are the two global policy proposals that are in our remit right now, or at least that we're monitoring right now. Each of the members keep an eye on how the policy is proceeding in each given region or in their own region. And the first of these is the global policy for autonomous system numbers. You might remember this from the last RIPE region. This is about removing the differentiation between 16-bit and 32-bit AS numbers. There's currently a policy in place such that at the end of this year, ICANN will merge, in essence, the 16 and 32-bit AS number space, and there'll be no distinction. The policy proposal here is to avoid that merging for now. This is in final call now in three regions. It's still in discussion in two. I know in the Aran region, it's I think it's reached the advisory council adoption, but there is discussion going on. And then in the Afrinic region, their next policy meeting is in November. So I imagine we'll see some progress then. The other policy proposal that's on our plate, and I think we'll hear more about this, I imagine, in the Address Policy Working Group later, is what we know as 2009-01, which is a policy proposal for the allocation of IPv4 blocks to RIRs. This has already been adopted in one region, although I see the text is changing in other regions, so there's still discussion to go on there. There'll be more discussion about that later, so I won't dwell on it right now. But if you'd like to know any more, I'm two slides ahead of myself. First, I want to say thank you very much, both the NRO itself for providing both the funding and the ongoing support in what we do, and especially the secretariat function, who provide wonderful support for the work that we do as volunteers. And the additional info I mentioned, there's the ASO's own website, there's the Number Resource Organisation's website, and if you have any questions, feel free to mail any of us, and that's my email address on the slide. Thank you very much.
Any questions for Dave? Yeah, okay, thanks Dave, thank you. Okay, moving on to the NRO updates. We have a stats update from my colleague at the RIPE NCC, Andrea Sima, who will give us the NRO statistics.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Andrea Cima from the RIPE NCC, and I'll be presenting the joint RIR stats. Am I too close to the microphone? No? Okay, no. This report is put together by all five RIRs, and it shows the number of IPv4, IPv6 allocations and AS number assignments which have been made. Now, one thing, as you can see the date, it's dated the 30th of June 2009, because these statistics are collected on a quarterly basis, and quarter number 3 is collected right now as we speak. Starting with IPv4, how much IPv4 allocations have been handed out, and how much is still available? Starting from the green bit, we can see that 35/8s are not available. They have been reserved by the IETF for different purposes. Moving to the left, we can see central registry with 91/8. These are the /8s which have been allocated in the early days of the internet and before the RER system was set in place. Now going down, we can see that 100/8s have been allocated to the RERs. But as I said just at the beginning, these numbers are from June 2009, and this number in the meantime has changed. And the total amount of /8s allocated to the RERs is now 104. Because both APNIC and the RAP-NCC in the meantime have received another 2/8s each. Bringing the amount of /8s allocated to APNIC to 34, RAP-NCC to 30, LACNIC still 6, like AFRINIC 3, and IRIN 31. So this also means that the number of /8s reserved by IANA for future allocation is not 30 but is 26, as Leo has told us earlier this morning. Now, how much address space has been allocated by each RER in the last few years? Now we can see that there has been a steady growth over the years. But if we look at the last 3-4 years, we can see that the amount of IPv4 space allocated in the AFRINIC, LACNIC, and ARIN region has been quite stable. There has been a growth in the RIPE region, even though in 2008 this growth has stopped. And like Jelf showed us before, the amount there is still growth in the APNIC region, where in 2008 a bit more than 5/8s have been allocated. Now, if we look at the total amount of IPv4 address space allocated in the last 10 years, we can see that the RIPE-NCC has allocated 22.76/8, IRIN 21.23, LACNIC 3.53, AFNIC 0.88, and APNIC 25.34/8. Moving on to AS numbers, we can see that in the first 5 years of this decade, ARIN has been the RER assigning the highest number of AS numbers. We can say that this role has somehow been taken over by the RAP-NCC since 2005. However, if we look at the numbers of the first six months of 2009, we can see that the number of AS numbers assigned in other regions has somehow been lowered, and this is most probably due to the effect of the economical crisis in which we are at the moment. Looking at the AS number assignments made by the RERs in the last 10 years, we can see that the RIPE-NCC has assigned almost 18,000 of them, ARIN almost 19,000, and each of those two RERs has actually made more AS number assignments than the other three RERs together. Okay, moving on to IPv6 and to what I think is the busiest slide of this presentation. On the top left, we can see all the IPv6 address space. A /3 of this block has been reserved by the IETF for global unicast. Out of these 512/8s, 506 are being reserved by the IANA for future allocations. Each of the RERs has received a /12 in October 2006. However, before this date, RERs would get /23 allocation blocks from the IANA, and that is what it's about, the lowest pie with all the other numbers, because the RAP-NCC had received 15/23s, APNIC 7, ARIN 5, LACNIC, and AFRINIC 1, and the 3/23s has been allocated for special purposes. If we look at the IPv6 allocations, the number of allocations over years, we can see that there has been some increase, and there's a growth trend in the number of IPv6 allocations given out, and this is most probably due to the awareness in the internet community about the depletion of IPv4 address space. However, we can see a big jump in 2008 in the RIPE region. And this is mainly due to the fact that the RIPE community in 2007 decided to remove one of the requirements of the IPv6 allocation policy, and mainly the one that was stating that an LAR had to plan for at least 200 end users within 2 years. Removing this requirement has made it easier for our, for LIRs to get their IPv6 allocation. If we look at the pie on your left side, we can see the number of IPv6 allocations made by each RAR. The RIPNCC has allocated about 1,500 IPv6 allocations, ARIN about 620, LACNIC about 190, AFRINIC 70, and APNIC about 520. Now, if you move to the other pie, to the one on the right-hand side, we can actually see the amount of address space that has been allocated, calculated in /32s. In /32s because that is the minimum allocation size. And we can see that the RIPNCC has allocated more than 33,500 /32s, ARIN almost 15,000, LACNIC about 200, AFRINIC 69, and APNIC about 24,000. Now this actually means that many RARs have actually been making allocations, IPv6 allocations, which are much larger than the minimum allocation itself. If you want to see this statistics again, or the latest ones, please see the NRO website, and the raw data can be found on the IANA pages. So that's it for me. Do you have any questions? No? Thank you. Yes.
Questions on the numbers. Jeff.
Can you just go back to the
Which one?
The IPv6 chart you had, Jeff Houston. Forward.
Yes.
Jeff Houston, APNIC. I was just questioning this because I think actually this is quite misleading. Of the APNIC and RIPE numbers on the right, the 24,000 and the 33,000, which is basically a /20 in APNIC and a /19 in RIPE, how many individual allocations do they refer to? It's a rhetorical question because I know the answer. The answer is 3. And the reason is that between January 1999 and somewhere around 2005?
Yes, until 2006.
We were using an HD ratio of 0.8 and a /48 end site. So a /20 spanned around 6 million customers, an average large-scale deployment.
Yes.
In the current framework, how much would you get for 5 million customers using an HD ratio of 0.93? You know, and the answer is probably around a /25, /26, /27. So I'm just pointing out that that slide is really on the right quite misleading as to what it represents, because it's actually the amalgam of two different policy regimes. And there were really only 3 allocations, maybe with ARIN there'd be a couple more, that accounted for the bulk of that space. And that was in the old policy framework.
Yes. Now you have a good point. I will bring it up with the other areas. Thank you. Any other questions? No. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Andrea. Okay, the last talk of this session will be just a general update from the NRO, which will be given by Axel Pawlik.
I'm not agile, as you can see. As Paula said, we sent him off to represent all of us at the ITU Telecom World in Geneva, and I think that's cold and rainy, and I got lucky to sit in sunny Lisbon? I don't know. All right, so quick update about the NRO, what it is and what we have been doing and what we are planning for the next couple of months. Basically, currently the NRO is just all of the RARs working together, and you probably know that already, to represent all of ourselves, you know, with one voice and all that. Formally protecting the unallocated number resource pool, although ICANN is doing that quite nicely currently. Promoting, protecting the bottom-up policy development process. This is what we are doing here this week. We need to inform people about it outside our traditional communities, politicians, governments, and obviously generic business as well, who are not familiar with it. And yeah, acting as the focal point for a one entry into the RIR system all over the world. We have been re-establishing basically the ASO with ICANN in a framework by an MOU signed in 2004, basically saying that the NRO is performing the role of the address supporting organization within ICANN. And well, that's what the Numbers Council or the Address Council is doing currently. Okay, we have three office holders within the NRO account. Chair is Adiel. I'm the secretary for the rest of the year, and Raoul from LACNIC is treasurer. We also have a couple of coordination groups to basically help us organize our engineering and communications work among the RIRs. There's the engineering coordination group, the ECG, with Andrei Wojcicki from the RIPE NCC as chair, and there's the CCG, the communications coordination group, with Paul as chair. And recently we thought communications is great, but we need also a group that focuses more on higher level political outreach, governments and the like, public affairs. And so I think this is the public affairs communications group. And Paul is chair of that as well. Multi-talented there. We also, for as long as we contribute to the ICANN budget, have an idea of how we divide those expenses among ourselves, and we do the same for overall NRO expenses, and you see the slides there. We have also recommitted ourselves to continue to contribute to the ICANN budget on the same level as the years before, so no big change there. Yeah, exchange of letters, basically. And we do go, of course, to all the ICANN meetings in one shape or the other. This year we've been in Mexico and in Sydney, and we will go on to Seoul in a couple of weeks' time. And one of the, we do all sorts of things there. One of the most visible and possibly the most continuous feature there is that we relatively regularly, not at every meeting, but certainly at every second or so, get invited and speak to the present to the Governmental Advisory Committee, also there as part of our outreach. And we are usually very well received there, and people are quite happy with what we are doing, and you can say that. That's nice. Internet Governance Forum. Obviously, there is one of these events every year, and we very actively participate in those. We coordinate workshops among ourselves and with other parties as well, basically to represent, to present what we are doing in the RIR world. There is the Multi-Stakeholder Advisory Group, the MAG, that is basically a group of quite a number of people from all over the place, from all walks of life, preparing the format of the fora. And Raoul is in that for us, basically. The next meeting in Sharm el-Sheikh, nice and sunny and warm probably, is taking place. There have been a number of preparatory meetings in Geneva already. We will have a booth there, and we, you know, send staff to do that. Basically, again, quite a number of staff from the RIRs and also board members from the RIRs are going to be there to talk about the good things that we are doing. We also have, a couple of years ago, started to produce a brochure from the NRO on continuing cooperation, basically, again, explaining in simple words and lovely pictures and some statistics what we have been doing, what we are doing, what we would like to continue to do. And we have just redone this publication, and we'll start distributing that there. International cooperation. Well, the ITU is an interesting partner always, and they have sometimes interesting ideas, so we need to talk to them quite closely. We do go to some of their meetings. Obviously, right now, Adil and quite a number of other RIR staff is in Geneva to represent ourselves at the Telecom World exhibition there for the next couple of days. And yeah, also we on the staff level go to the ITU and talk to people over there, try to get some idea of what they are saying about studying the allocation of internet address space and how they see their role in that. And that's always interesting. Also, you might remember last year in summer we went to Seoul for the OECD managerial meeting. The one big thing that for us we thought as coming out of there was the establishment of an advisory committee. Paul, what's that, the ITAC, the IT advisory committee?
Internet technical advisory.
Yeah. Anyway, that has been decided to be brought into existence, and the RAIs are part of this, as is quite a number of other from our friends in the technical, what we call the technical community. And of course, they have occasional meetings and request our presence and our advice there. So that's a very good, relatively new partnership. In 2009, we have done quite a bit in engineering, sort of perennial efforts to improve what we are doing and doing it together. Obviously, V4, V6 is a really big issue there, and we are continuing to have joint discussions among the RIR staff, the RIR boards, and the like. And we managed finally to go all together to one retreat all together. That's the CEOs of the RIRs and some of their senior staff to go to a retreat in Mauritius, nice and sunny again, to sit inside in an air-conditioned hotel room to think about quite a lot of things. We decided on the new coordination group there. We also looked at ways to improve the ways we work together and to improve communications within the NRO. Basically thought it doesn't make much sense. As you know, the offices of chairman and secretary and treasurer go around the world among the RIRs on a yearly basis, and we used to also rotate some of the technical infrastructure. It, in the end, doesn't make that much sense, so we decided not to do that for some of them. We also said that starting from next year, the coordination group chairs should actually be very close to the chairman of the NRO. So we started next year. And we also said among ourselves, well, you know, seeing that short ASNs are getting relatively scarce, we want to restrict ourselves to getting two blocks on each occasion from the IANA. And basically, that's it. If you have any questions, you're more than welcome. Otherwise, there is a coffee break looming outside. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Axel. Okay, we're just a little bit early. We'll let you go to your coffee break. There's plenty of time for you to chat in the hallway. The next session starts here at 11 o'clock, so we'll see you then. Thanks very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.